with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
You play the game.
I mean, listen, we talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. Not a game. We talking about practice.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
Touchdown. You are now locked in to the Clock Dodgers Podcast.
Welcome to the Clock Dodgers Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Maligno. With me is the squad, Adam Cahill and Josh Crocker. What up, what up?
What's up, man?
Hey, Neil.
So excited, you two. So excited. as much fun as it is with these two guys.
I can't handle the criticism on the intro, man.
Like, we didn't get individual introductions.
No.
I tried, listen. It doesn't deserve my full attention.
Josh was so bad last time that I didn't want to do the individual.
I'm like,
let me mix it up. You know, maybe Josh will play off Adam.
Oh my God. I cannot possibly do this right.
Listen. As exciting as you guys are, we brought a guest. All right. So this is a second guest episode in a row, I believe, with a first time guest joining us too. So, you know, we got to keep finding guys to bring in some flavor in the intros because maybe I should just bring intro guest to replace Josh. It might be the best move, but
it's like a pinch hitter.
Yeah, that might be the move. Either way, though, listen, he's a contributor at 4for4, DLF, Number Fire. You may have heard him on countless podcasts. If not, you're about to get familiar with him. Welcome to the Clock Dodgers Podcast, Chris Allen. What's up, man?
When you read it all back, that makes it sound like I do a lot when I really don't. but what's going on, fellas? I really appreciate y'all giving me the time to sit down with everybody. And I mean, for where we're at in the off season, I mean, it's the end of June, early July. I mean, and with all of the, I guess the world around us has now played a bigger part into our little fantasy football world than we had intended to. So I'm hoping we actually have some football to talk about here with the next couple of months. But let's go and wrap for a little bit if we can.
Yeah, yeah. We find things. We drag it out. We find something. I do like to start off every show when we have a guest. And kind of I call it a warm up. You know, it's kind of like throwing you softball pitches just to kind of start you up a little bit here. So we're just going to dig in a little bit about you, give everyone a little brief background on you, just in case if someone's not familiar with it, they kind of know, you know, what you're about. I did mention all those sites that you contribute to and all the work that you're doing. As far as all those places and all those things that you're doing, is there different focuses at each one, or are you just writing fantasy football everywhere with no particular focus?
A little bit of everything, to be quite honest. My quote unquote home is 4for4, and I do most of my like strategy pieces, long form research stuff, like all of that typically goes at 4for4, and that's more or less where I got my start at. I started writing there. This will now be my third season writing for 4for4, and I originally started off just writing about weather. That's what the FFWX portion of my Twitter handle is, because that was my quote unquote claim to fame. So most of my strategy stuff, best ball work, because I'm pretty heavy into that, most of that is housed over at 4for4. Over at Number Fire, I do some more in-season pieces. So if you're looking for week-to-week pieces on maybe who you should drop, I even started doing a weekly weather report over at Number Fire. Which, I mean, check that out if you want to. It's where I basically just look at the weather reports, like for the upcoming games, seeing there's going to be a possible impact if you should freak out or not, so on and so forth. Over at Dynasty League Football, me and my partner, Adam Wilde, like we've been doing a podcast on our own that's been like Dynasty oriented for the past couple of seasons. But we do video content over at DLF. That's really just answering some mailbag questions on a week-to-week basis, what this player's value is, doing trade polls, looking at that, a lot of just the nitty gritty when it comes to Dynasty League football, or when it comes to just Dynasty content, like in general.
Right.
And then finally, quote unquote, breaking news, more or less. I've taken another freelance position. I'll be doing a little bit of work over at Football Guys.
Okay.
So I'll be working with Sigmund Bloom and the rest of those dudes over there. I haven't really figured out what I'm going to do over there yet. I just sat down with Sig and Joe Bryant last week to take the freelance spot. I have a couple of projects in mind. I haven't dropped those yet. I'm talking with Sig about that right now. But really, my interest is a lot of the strategy that goes behind fantasy football, and also how a lot of the different aspects that of the game that we consider to be maybe minute, or even just a lot of the narratives that go into it. That's really been my, I guess, my drive to write. So as I've kind of, you know, started digging into parts and pieces of it, I've said, hey, you know, are you interested in me writing about this more? And places have taken me on. So it's just kind of grown from there.
Nice. Yeah, it does sound like you keep yourself busy, man. You had it. You acted like the intro was a little too much, but I think you do keep yourself pretty busy, man.
I try to.
I think it's cool that when we had Justin on a couple of weeks ago, you know, his thing is like the O-line and stuff. You have a focus on the weather. These are like unique things to be focused on, and they're not like – Like I mentioned to Justin, they're not like super like popular, right? Like things that people will super get into, and sites are, you know, readily pushing so much of it. Like, it's cool that you guys are doing these like unique avenues as far as like these fantasy. I mean, I know you do everything, but like that's a cool focus to have. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of places, and there's not a criticism at all, but everybody has their own take on a lot of the same concepts. Like, should you draft Juju Smith-Schuster in the third round or fourth round? Or they've got similar thoughts on, or at least the content is fairly similar in terms of everybody's got a ranking site, everybody's got a draft kit and all that. But I think at 4 for 4, we definitely have most of that, but we also have a lot of just like niche content areas where people that have really just started asking some of those questions in specific areas of fantasy football, or just football in general, like you mentioned, Justin, and looking at O-lines, it was just, well, just go do that. I mean, right. If that interests you, then just keep pulling on that thread and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, 4 for 4 is really cool. I've never had a bad thing to say about anyone there. Everyone has come on from 4 for 4. It's awesome. Everything from top to bottom at 4 for 4 is great. So that's really cool. Also, you gave us an exclusive about this potential, what you're starting up here, another gig. You said you were working on an article also to me on the Messenger. Can we get an exclusive on the WhatsApp?
So right now it's about my thoughts on how to attack the quarterback position in 2020. A lot of it has gone into, I think, anybody that like follows any of the mainstream guys, JJ Zacharyson, Rich Rebar, I mean, most of those guys, they've been kind of talking about the way that the quarterback market has shifted over the past couple of seasons. And I'm really thinking in 2020, we're gonna kind of see a lot of that come to a head, where that the late round draft strategy is still, I think, one of the pillars of how we approach like drafting fantasy quarterbacks. Right. But with the way that the market has kind of shifted with so many quarterbacks like being there in the, let's say, the middle rounds now, like 7 to 12, 7 to 13, however you want to categorize it. But a lot of the glut of those good quarterbacks are now being taken in that area. And while late round strategy is still viable, you're finding guys with like a lot more warts on them that you wouldn't have that you're not as excited about as you would have been in years past. I mean, the guys like in the past where you might take a wait for Kirk Cousins, or I mean, wait for guys that even had a little bit more upside, like in the past, like what was it last season? It was Dak Prescott that was going like in the middle to back end of drafts. I mean, those guys, they're not going to be there anymore. So people are trying to talk themselves into Joe Burrow, Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Darnold. I mean, not to say these guys are bad, but it's just they don't have the same excitement as the guys that we were looking at for a late round targets even last year or 2-3 years ago. So most of my research into this article I'm putting together has been looking at what are some of those statistics that correlate year over year that can help you put together a profile for what you should be looking for in drafts specific to the quarterback position, and then also where you should kind of be targeting picking up one. Like if it's going to be that mid-round strategy, okay, well, how do you construct your team in the picks before that, looking at opportunity cost in order to come up with an optimal strategy to build your fantasy squad.
Nice. That sounds super interesting, super valuable. Which site will that be on?
That'll be on 4 for 4.
4 for 4. All right, gotcha. Definitely got to check that one out. Also, you're in the same division as my guy Adam here. Do you know that, for Scott Fishbowl?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. I was hoping we'd be able to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to be taking more notes on the other person, you think, you or him?
Probably me. I mean, I can't. Okay, I'm not gonna lie, y'all. So these past couple of seasons that I've been in the Scott Fishbowl, I don't want to talk about it. I'm just saying that I need to pick it up. Okay. Last season I drafted, just to give you an idea of what my season looked like, I came out of, I think it was either the fourth or fifth round, drafting both Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger, just to give y'all an idea of how my Scott Fishbowl went in 2019. So, yeah, we're going to need to step it up in 2020, and I'm hoping that we do it. So I'm doing mocks. I'm in one of the best ball leagues set up by John Bosch. So now I've got some skin in the game already. And I'm finding out, like, you know, where I'm mining ADP data. So I'm making sure that I'm up on it. So in a week when it's time to start drafting, it is on and I'm ready to roll.
All of that work. And now you're here also spying on Adam, which I respect, man.
Exactly. I respect that. I'm taking notes, man.
We're not only in the same league, but we're drafting back to back. If I remember correctly, you're drafting 10th and I'm drafting 11th. Memory serves. Yeah. That's going to be fun.
Oh yeah. So I'm sure after every pick that I make, I'm going to see your pick and I'm going to be like, damn, I should have made that pick.
I know it.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys don't, you know, tip each other off here in the podcast, but we got to talk football. So, you know, it's just the way this thing works, man.
I know. I hope I don't give too much away.
Before we get into football stuff and everything else that people come here for, I did want to ask you, when I asked for like questions and stuff like that, I got a lot of home brewing stuff. But from people, we'll get into those questions directly, but just, I wanted to ask you before we get any further, is that a hobby? Is it something more than that? Like, I don't know the background on it.
I mean, I don't know, to be quite honest. I've been homebrewing for a little over 10 years now. And just within the past couple of years, I've been going to competitions and whatnot. And I've received a few awards for some of my quote unquote creations. And Justin, he's come over to my place, sampled my stuff. I sent him home with a couple of brews a few times. So it's just been, to me, I still consider it a hobby, absolutely. But I'm hoping at some point I could probably turn it into something more. I think my pipe dream is that I can retire because I'm an engineer for like by day. But my retirement goal would be to, one, own a brewery, and two, be able to do fantasy football. Nice. If I could retire from engineering and do those two things, I think I'd be a happy man.
Yeah, that'd be fire. I think most people would love that outcome. So, hey, man, that's cool. We got more questions specifically on it, so we'll get further into it. But I just wanted to kind of get a background on it. All right. So that's it for the warm-up. It sounds like you're ready to go, man. You get the gist of what we're doing here. Now, so communication, trust, it's everything. We know that. So it's time for some trust issues. Chris, in case you're not familiar with it, we're going to throw out players, situations, questions, all kinds of stuff here about football. And we want to know if you trust the situation or if you have trust issues with that. All right.
Okay.
And you can get as deep into it as you want, or just be simple and quick with it. It's totally up to you. We'll let you start with the first one since it's kind of the big news that's happened recently. So the first one is Cam Newton starting day one for the Patriots. Do you trust that or do you have trust issues?
I trust that. I mean, I'll happily be wrong, but I 100% trust it. I was not on the Jarrett Stidham hype train, not one bit. I could not believe for one second that the Patriots, they might have been tanking for Trevor or any of that other stuff. I think Cam Newton, if they had any qualms about his health today, like right now, they wouldn't have signed him at all. Now, there might be some questions about his durability throughout the season. I think that is a fair question to have, but as of right now, today on June 30th, I do not think that there is any health considerations to be made regarding Cam Newton. So if we're talking about a healthy Cam Newton right now, get Jared Stidham back on the bench where he belongs, and let's have Cam Newton go out and play for the New England Patriots. I want to see it.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it last week. I think someone hit us up on Twitter and said that we mentioned Cam Newton signing with the Patriots. So it's kind of funny that it happened that quickly. But it's something that everyone's been talking about and kind of predicting. Like, it just seemed like the obvious thing, right? Like, everyone thought the Patriots, if they don't roll with Stidham, you know, that they're going to have to sign someone. And Cam Newton was so obviously like perfect fit for this team as far as just talent wise. Is there anyone, Adam, Josh, any of you guys disagree that Cam Newton's going to start day one? Like, do you see this other outcome where it's not that case? Like, I've heard people say Hoyer, as ridiculous as that sounds, like, he knows the system. He's been around, like, all this stuff going on. How can Cam, you know, how can the team be confident in Cam knowing everything already? And, you know, Stidham's still young. Like, do either one of you see a scenario where Cam Newton really isn't the starter?
It would involve injury.
Yeah, injury. Like, only, right?
I think Brian Hoyer is a good reason. Well, another good reason to never have been on the Stidham train. But I think Cam has the job until he can't do it.
Damn, no love for Stidham. No love. Adam, do you have any love for this guy?
Folks, let this be a lesson to you about championing these late drafted quarterbacks. Like, Mason Rudolph wasn't it. Jarrett Stidham wasn't it. Please stop.
Patriot fans have a right. They get a slight pass, man. Like, the Patriot fans get a slight pass on believing in late round quarterbacks.
I mean, I guess
we got to get them.
Yeah.
Adam, you totally Cam Newton from day one. We seen you do a trade, buddy. So I don't think there's any question.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think that they make this move. To echo what Chris said, like if there was any question of Cam Newton being able to start, I don't think they make this move. It's just not. It's very unpatriot to do that. So for them to even sign him, I think all signs point to, as of now, Cam Newton is healthy. If Cam Newton's healthy, he will be starting for the Patriots in week one.
Yeah.
And from there, things get super interesting for fantasy, in my opinion.
For sure. And it's funny because Cam Newton signed with the Patriots. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like this perfect storm for people who hate the Patriots, because a lot of people also hate Cam Newton for some reason I don't understand. So it's kind of like funny, like if you hate the Patriots and you hate Cam Newton, this is like perfect. You could hate them both equally together. But it's one of those things for me, like I don't necessarily root for the Patriots, but I love Cam Newton. So now I'm like, man, I got to hope the Patriots do well, because I want to see Cam Newton quiet the naysayers.
Who doesn't like Cam Newton?
Some people just don't, man.
Miserable people.
Am I right, Chris? Have you seen a lot of people hate on Cam Newton?
Oh, I mean, we were talking, what was it? Was it last season or 2 years ago when the mother writes the letter to the Carolina Panthers organization because they didn't like the way that they didn't like Cam's swag.
Yeah.
And then when it permeated to the rest of the team, and it was the team running out to do, you know, the dab, and he made that, you know, that was the whole, the national movement, quote unquote, that Cam started after doing the touchdowns. I mean, this whole, like the way that he presents himself, I think the one dig I would say that that should be leveled at him was his criticism of the female reporter when she was talking to him about running routes, and she had some like legitimate questions about it, and he was digging on her intelligence as a reporter. I think that's the only claim that you can level at him. Other than that, he's been everything that we wanted for him as a quarterback. Sure, the inaccuracy issues exist, but I mean, he was able to make that up in spades as a better athlete on the field since he came into the league. And he took a team that was that was highlighted by Devin Funchess, Brenton Burson,
Kelvin Benjamin.
Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, he took most of these like no-name wide receivers. I don't know if Kelvin Benjamin on the team at the time, but he wound up taking most of these scrub wide receivers to a Super Bowl. I mean, in one of like the most, in his most efficient season. So it's just, I think a lot of folks are rooting for him to fail because they just, they don't think his attitude is a part of the game. When at the same time, Tom Brady can yell at his coach, you know, Brett Favre can get away with, I mean, literally anything. Aaron Rodgers can like just completely say screw you to his head coach. I mean, but we see the same attitude portrayed in other quarterbacks. But with Cam, it's just that he's had a target on his back for the past 4 or 5 seasons, not understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, something stinks.
Yeah. I even seen, I don't know if it was Pro Football Talk. I don't know who it was. I don't want to quote me as quote the site, but someone even said like, oh, now the Patriots have to deal with, you know, Cam in the locker room. I'm like, are they kidding me? Like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, exactly. So I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's crazy. We have more to talk about with Cam, but before we move on, does anyone have anything else to say about Cam being the day one starter? Anything? Nothing? We're good. Unless injuries happen, everyone right now believes in Cam Newton day one for the Patriots. The next one we have here, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin will both finish as top 20 wide receivers. I'll let Josh start with this one.
Yeah, I don't have any reason not to believe that this would happen. Like, what I understand that Tom Brady is not going to do all of the things that Jameis did to just push game script. And, you know, he may not throw the ball as far on an average attempt, but I don't think that that means that these two wide receiver ones finish all the way outside of the top 20. Like, Tom Brady, I think, is fine. They are the thing that matters, not the quarterback.
Tom Brady is more than good enough. I'm with you, Josh.
Yeah.
More than good enough. More than good enough. Adam, what's your feelings on this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it to me, it's like borderline. I think as long as, like, that offense clicks, like, we – really the only question mark is Tom Brady actually as old as he claims he is. Does he actually finally fall off? All signs point to that not being the case. I mean, he somehow found the fountain of youth. So as long as he continues to play at basically the ability that he was at last year, in that offense, in a Bruce Arians offense, there's no reason he shouldn't be able to support two top 20 wide receivers.
Yeah, we both we all agree here as far as that goes. And that fountain of youth is actually a lot of water, like just a lot of water.
Chris, it's like TB12 juice.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, are you with us, man? Or are you gonna? Or do you have something here that you don't see it looking so good for these two?
I mean, I guess my only concern is how many touchdowns do you really think that they're going to be, that they're going to throw like this season? Because I think that everybody is on board with the idea that the Buccaneers are now going to win a bunch of games, but how often are they going to score? I mean, if we know that their offense is good and that's fine, but their defense is now also picked up as well. So are we really going to see a lot of those like jailbreak type situations that Jameis essentially put them into by throwing so many interceptions that forced them to pass over 600 times? Now, Tom Brady could be efficient and still get to a similar output that Jameis had offensively. I 100% agree with that. But could we just wind up seeing games where they wind up sitting on a lead, because they were able to get ahead and they wind up winning that way? It's entirely possible. But on the along that same line, I mean, in order for them to have that lead, Tom Brady has to have thrown them a bunch of touchdowns.
Right.
And I'm looking at the wide receivers that finished in the top 20 last season, and we're looking at guys like Cortland Sutton, Stephon Diggs, John Brown. I think he finishes like wide receiver 19, Michael Gallup at wide receiver 20. I mean, so for guys that are just as talented as Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, I think on the talent level, I would take both of those guys ahead, and I would assume that the talent level is much greater than any of those guys that I just listed.
Right.
So I think it's well within the range of outcomes that both of them wind up within the top 20.
For sure. Yeah, I think we all agree on that too as well. Yeah, it'll be interesting. If one, and anyone can speak up here, if one of those two had a fall at the top 20, you guys, does everyone feel like it's Mike Evans?
Yeah. I think just with the type of receiver that Chris Godwin is, he can be utilized more in like that short intermediate game. And honestly, if Brady's going to deteriorate in any way, I feel like it's going to be with that downfield ability. Yeah. So just based on that alone, it's going to cater more to what Chris Godwin's good at.
Gotcha. All right, cool. All right, let's move on to the next one we have here. Mark Ingram will hold off J.K. Dobbins and finish top 12 again in 2020. Adam, you want to start this one off, man?
Yeah, I put this on here because I thought it was interesting that he finished 11th in PPR last year. I don't feel like I remember that being the case, but it's just that offense is, I mean, last year from a rushing perspective, I mean, they were far and away ahead of the rest of the league. So, by all expectations, what Lamar allows that offense to become, I expect them to continue to be as efficient as they are on the ground. So then it really just becomes a question of, well, how healthy is Mark Ingram going to be? How many touches is he ultimately going to get? And if last year he could be the running back 11 on only 200 carries, I mean, that to me just screams of value if you can get him at like an RB2 value.
Right.
So for me, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be one of those guys that's a must start. And I think especially at the running back position, and this is in like normal redraft leagues, obviously, where you're going to be churning through a lineup throughout the year, I think you really do have to focus on players that you think when they are in your lineup are going to be able to have big spike weeks. And Mark Ingram just presents that because he is a guy who's going to catch the ball in the backfield, and he is someone who does have a ton of touchdown upside. So in individual weeks, he's going to have those spike weeks. And I think more and more, especially just personally for strategy, I'm going to be looking towards that as opposed to trying to focus on, you know, guys that are not quote unquote injury prone. Because I think you can make an injury argument for just about any running right. back these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark Ingram, I mean, he's this guy who's like, he's like proven like that he can do good and play really well no matter who was in the backfield with him. Like, he's done it by himself. He's done it with all kinds of vets when he was young. He's done it with young guys that come in. So, I mean, there's no reason why, you know, J.K. Dobbins is going to stop Mark Ingram from being good at football and good on this team. Top 12, I don't know. I mean, clearly they drafted J.K. Dobbins for a reason. And we didn't really, you know, I mean, it's a really good running offense. And there's a chance that it's not crazy. I would say trust issues. as far as top 12, but that's not a knock on Mark Ingram to me. Like, he can still be top 15. He can still be super, you know, worthy of the pick that you draft him at. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing if he's not necessarily top 12. But again, you guys know, I tend to side with vets a lot of times when these teams sign or draft young running backs, because everyone gets crazy about these rookies and, you know, what they did in college and how great and amazing they're going to be in their pros. And while that may be fact, I always stay, you know, strong in my ground where I feel like they're not going to push a Mark Ingram out, though. They're just not going to just do that. And you guys, I know I get bashed a lot. I agree the same thing with Marlon Mack. I don't think he's just going to get pushed out. So I stand firm on those things. So, yeah, I think Mark Ingram will still have another really good season. Josh?
I like Mark Ingram this season. I think that if he stays healthy, he's probably going to be a top 15 running back. And at the same time, I want J.K. Dobbins not very far behind him, just because the opportunity in Baltimore is so great for that sure. J.K. Dobbins has upside that you're not going to get in a lot of other places.
Yeah. Chris, you agree?
I have questions.
Okay.
I got to be the voice of, well, I guess I do have trust issues there.
I mean, we're here to help it.
I'm not going to point to draft capital. I mean, like second round draft capital, like whatever. That's not my thing. But I do have questions over the fact that, I mean, Mark Ingram, he's coming off of he scored 15 touchdowns last season. I mean, if we were already looking at giving what the 19 touchdowns that Aaron Jones scored last season, the side eye. Mm-hmm. I mean, why can't we do the same for a 30-year-old running back? I mean, on a team that, I mean, again, that did just draft, like, I would assume it's his direct replacement. Now, do I think that week one, Mark Ingram is going to be the no question starter? Yes, I do believe that. But at what point do we start to have durability concerns, like regarding Mark Ingram, considering last season he wound up having to sit out the last couple of games, like due to an injury? And I don't know. I have concerns there. And that's kind of where, and also off of a season where he wasn't really a part of that passing game, where especially for running backs that you're going to wind up drafting in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, I mean, you would at least like them to see them have a much larger piece of that pie. I mean, Ingram only had like 7% of the targets of the market share, like there in Baltimore. And if we're expecting more passing, maybe less rushing for Lamar, but maybe more passing, I would hope that Mark Ingram sees more of that, but we know that, I mean, J.K. Dobbins is the much better receiver. So where is this workload supposed to come if Mark Ingram is coming off of this high efficiency season? If he takes any sort of step back, I mean, is he going to be able to, I guess, pay off his draft value? And at that point, I just don't know.
Yeah, those are fair points, and I'm curious. So if you do have trust issues with it and you do see him regressing, how far?
I would say that, so if right now, especially from a best ball standpoint, I've seen him go in the fourth, fifth round or something like that, I would take him slightly after that. So okay. Probably in the same tier, because I think guys like, let's see, if I were to put a name to it, I can't think of a name offhand, to be quite honest with you. But I would say probably maybe a few picks behind where his ADP is currently at, I would wind up taking there and feel a bit more comfortable about him.
Gotcha. All right. So you're not okay, crazy about current ADP.
Like, I'm looking at SFB ADP, and I'm looking at Mark Ingram. And so if I go up, Mark Ingram or Cam Akers?
I couldn't do neither. Is that an option?
Well, I just think – I'm going to go Mark Ingram there. I'd take him over Mostert. I'd take him over David Montgomery. David Johnson, probably. Like,
that's a question mark.
I've got
maybe. Now you're talking crazy, but you have yeah. Room for a minute there. Yeah. But I see what you're saying. Like, based on where he's being drafted right now, there's not a ton of draft capital risk.
Yeah, I think David Johnson, definitely that's where you draw the line.
Yeah, I think I have to draw a line there. Like, I would much rather take the wide receivers going around him than just taking him.
Right. Right.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that just like among running backs, like the SFB ADP I'm looking at has him at RB27. I've got him at RB18. I think he's RB18. I think that's fair. And that's like, apparently I'm going to have Mark Ingram on my team this year.
Sounds like it. It sounds like you're going to be our canary in the coal mine, Josh. You're going to be the one that lets us know whether this was a bad idea or a good idea.
I mean, for me, right? Kenyon Drake or Mark Ingram? Mark Ingram's opportunity is better.
I'm taking Drake.
Yeah, I think, again, like, Josh, just quit all your head, bud.
whose team provided more opportunity to running backs last year? It was not Kenyon Drake's.
This is true.
Taking the better player, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. Better player, and I think better situation based upon allocation of touches.
Mm-hmm. Without much behind him either. I mean, Mark Ingram literally has J.K. Dobbins there. I mean, we know that they at least still could use Gus Edwards. We have no idea what they want to do.
Expectation in the world should be that they're going to use Gus Edwards. I mean, this is a guy who they've given 130 carries to back-to-back seasons and posted over 5 yards per carry. Those are things that NFL teams actually give a shit about as much as we don't in the fantasy world a lot of times. Mm-hmm. When you can give a guy 130 carries and have him post over 5 yards per carry, they're going to continue to give him 130 carries. So that's honestly where I see the struggle with J.K. Dobbins getting worked in. But injuries always occur in the NFL. You know, these guys are bound to get dinged up. They're bound to, you know, have rookies have to get touches. So, you know, everybody's going to get their share based upon just, you know, wear and tear of the league. But
I think so.
But yeah, I mean, I think as far as those comparables go, Josh, we can move on.
Yeah, I got a little too far up there.
I'm telling right, cool. you.
So there's some contention there on Mark Ingram. I like it. That means there's going to be value or somewhere for somebody.
Exactly.
All right. The last one we have here for trust issues is eating Taco Bell with no bathroom within a 20-mile radius. Chris, I think you can start. I think you can start, Chris. I think this doesn't, you know.
Oh, no, I could not do that in good conscience. I mean, I just turned 37 years old, and I couldn't do that. Maybe if I was, you know, back in my 20s, I might be able to consider it. But no, not these days. I couldn't do it.
You could have stopped at eating Taco Bell. Like, that's, the sentence didn't need to go any further. Oh,
come on now. I mean, you haven't lived until trash. You've gone out. You've been out drinking until, you know, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and you hit up the old Bell on the way home. I mean, it's a right of passage.
Everyone I know always wanted to go to Taco Bell. Waffle House. I will not eat there.
Yeah, it's Taco Bell or Waffle House. Pick one, man.
That's not true. There are other options.
Oh, man, not that late. I mean, where else are you going to go?
And on that note, this episode is sponsored by Taco Bell and the Nacho Grande. No,
Taco Bell and Waffle House.
Come on. Adam Slander, you can't you see just like Josh went too far on the Mark Ingram thing, you went too far by just slander and Taco Bell in general.
Right? And
that's going too far, Adam.
Now I want some tacos.
Me too. That's the problem with talking about food. All right. Let's move off of trust and trust issues. I think we've dealt with some of our internal issues there, guys. Let's move on. We're going to jump over to rank them. We only have two today. We got some names here, some players, and we just want to rank them within the means of a topic here. So the first one is QBs in new places. We'll let Josh start with this one. So the QBs in new places, rank them best to worst with Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Teddy Bridgewater, and Phillip Rivers. I repeat. Tom Brady,
okay.
Cam Newton, Teddy Bridgewater, Phillip Rivers.
I think Phillip Rivers has got to be worst because he's probably working with the worst wide receiver group there. And then I would go to Teddy because I just don't have a lot of like high expectations, ceiling expectation for Teddy Bridgewater. I think he's going to be just fine at distributing the ball to Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore, but himself as a fantasy asset, I don't know that he's going to be great. I think I just like for the durability issues, I think I've got to put Tom Brady on top of Cam Newton. He also definitely has the best wide receivers in the group. So that's another reason to put him ahead of Cam.
For sure.
But it would not surprise me if Cam plays like 5 games and has a better points per game than Tom Brady on the season.
Man, how badly I want to put Cam at the top of this list, but I don't think you can do that with his weapons. Like, it's just, and it's crazy because, like, I mean, how much better is he going to make those weapons look? You know, how much better are these guys, you know, a second year into the, you know, somebody guys like N'Keal Harry and all these guys, like, how are they going to look? Who knows, right? But it's hard to ever put them over guys like Godwin, Evans, or anyone like that. So, yeah, I think Tom Brady has to go first. Cam Newton has to go second. It's actually probably got to go in order here. I mean, it just depends. Probably the real question here is Teddy Bridgewater or Phillip Rivers, whether you worry about, you know, whether Teddy can actually take this role on and do what he's been looking to do, or if he's got these guys behind him who are going to take his job in this new offense. And then Philip Rivers, the old man, you know, is he going to hold off the rookie? I feel confident that he will, but we'll see. So I think I actually go in the order that this is in probably, but I might flip Rivers and Teddy Bridgewater because I'm more worried and skeptical about Teddy over Philip Rivers. Chris, you got this one?
I would agree with you there. Probably go Tom Brady up front. What they drafted and what they drafted in order to boost their offensive line and what they still have there offensively. I think he's got to go number one. Cam, probably take Cam like right after that. Of course, the better quarterback, or at least of the remaining two, or the remaining three rather, but do have some questions about the surrounding talent. I mean, Julian Edelman's, 33, 34. N'Keal Harry in his second year, already questions about him being a bust. So we can debate that. But I lean towards Teddy as the number three there. I'm biased. I do think that in his short starts, like when Drew Brees was down with his thumb injury, I think he showed that if it's a quick passing scheme with some RPOs like mixed in there, he can distribute the ball fairly accurately and fairly well. I think that the way that I envision them using both Curtis Samuel and Robbie Anderson is not just using them as deep threats, but also as playmakers out of the backfield, since Curtis Samuel is a converted running back.
Right.
So I think there's plenty of playmaking potential there. The problem is the offensive line, because he goes from one of the best in the league in New Orleans to one of the worst in the league in Carolina. So that's the linchpin in the whole thing. And then probably Philip Rivers after that. A mix of young and old talent, like on the receiving core, one of the best offensive lines like in the league. But I have some more questions about the talent around him than anything else. So I probably would take it in that order.
Gotcha. And yeah, Adam, before I let you talk here, I just want to actually pose another question to you in a way here. Is there any situation, Adam, where you see Teddy Bridgewater or Philip Rivers ahead of Cam Newton? I know we're excited about the Cam Newton news and we're not excited about the offense, like broken running backs, wide receivers that were so questionable about who's the tight ends. Like, I mean, unless Cam Newton does what we've seen him do in the past and make people look a lot better than they are and just get, you know, make crazy things happen, there's a chance that Philip Rivers or Teddy Bridgewater can outplay him. Adam, would you be confident enough to put that here now on the table though?
No, actually, I really disagree.
No?
And the main reason is simply just based upon Cam Newton's rushing ability. I mean, everything that Cam showed us throughout his career from a fantasy perspective shows us that he is going to be someone who has a high floor week to week just based upon his consistency in rushing, and especially rushing in the red zone. I'll be interested to see if Bill Belichick tries to curb that at all. Some seem to think he will. I'm more of the thought that if it's effective, they're going to do it, and it's effective. We've seen how effective it is. So it'll be interesting to see if they continue to utilize Cam in the red zone in a rushing capacity like he has been throughout his career. I think if he is, though, him and Tom Brady have very similar ceilings, just based on Cam's rushing upside in comparison to what Brady can do at this age while with those weapons in a Bruce Arians offense. So for me, those two guys are one and two, and they're pretty much neck and neck with Brady. Still, you've got to be more confident in him. Yeah. But really, I think Philip Rivers is being disrespected, if I can be honest. I mean, last year was his worst season in the 5 years, and he still finishes the QB 15. I mean, he's someone who's consistently year after year a low end QB 1. And I just don't see Teddy Bridgewater becoming that. I think basically Philip Rivers' floor is his ceiling. Now, again, this is Philip Rivers' floor based upon what he's done historically. He's obviously going to a new team, but guess what? Teddy Bridgewater is too. I mean, Teddy has just as many obstacles. So really the only upside I see from Teddy Bridgewater's perspective is what Josh mentioned, which is he has these fantastic weapons around him. And I think we would all probably agree that the weapons in Carolina are stronger than the weapons in Indianapolis. But I don't think it's dramatically so. And I don't think that the weapons make the quarterback as much as Josh would like to argue it. but we won't go down that rabbit hole. We'll just stick here And I'll just say that I don't think Philip Rivers is done. And I think unless that transition just goes terribly, his, you know, floor season is basically Teddy Bridgewater's ceiling season.
Gotcha. I tried to create some doubt with you for Cam, and it just didn't work. You were too upset about the disrespect for Philip Rivers. You couldn't see past it. I understand, man. I understand. This is going to be a fun group to watch. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. This is going to be a nice, fun group to see how they play out. And they're going to be, you know, pretty important parts of fantasy. So it's going to be really fun to see, you know, if whereas we all seem pretty sure about these guys in this order. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. The next group I have here, this is the last rank them for today's show, is rookie running backs in 2020. DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, Vaughn. Keyshawn Vaughn and J.K. Dobbins, who we talked a little bit about earlier. Who wants to take this one first? Josh, Adam?
I'll take it. Right, yeah. Okay. I would go with Cam Akers first. Mm-hmm. And then Vaughn. No, I'm sorry. I missed Dobbins. It's Dobbins first. Dobbins, Cam Akers, Keyshawn Vaughn, DeAndre Swift last.
Interesting. Interesting. You just bigged up Ingram past David Johnson.
It's the same opportunity. I like them both for the same reason. Like if either one of these guys gets the opportunity, they're in. They're golden.
So based upon that, Josh, and I will only say this because I'm kind of flabbergasted with the way that you ordered them, but I understand the process. Do you think they all have the same opportunity year one? Because based on the way you rank them, I think you're essentially saying best case scenario, J.K. Dobbins is in the best offense. He will succeed the most. Cam Akers is in the second best offense. He'll succeed. Like that's kind of the logic that I'm piecing out. Is that where you're coming from?
Yeah, okay. It's basically just the size of the opportunity in front of them.
I actually don't hate that. I really don't because I – my biggest thing, I'll be honest, I'm the one who created this list for this question. My biggest thing with these rookies is all, I don't know the opportunity, like more so than I feel with most rookies going into seasons. And I don't know if it's because of the COVID situation and we just have less training camp type information, but I really don't know with any of these four running backs going into next season what to expect from an opportunity share standpoint.
Yeah, it is an interesting discussion. I mean, Chris, do you have any feelings on that as far as opportunity share with these guys?
Yeah, we talked about like Dobbins, Ingram already, but I'm a little bit higher on Akers, I guess, out of that entire group. Just look for at least from an opportunity standpoint, because at least in the few times that we were able to see Daryl Henderson like get to the field, one, he didn't do a lot with the touches that he was given. It just didn't seem like Sean McVay was really all too enthusiastic about trotting him out at any point throughout the season, even when they knew that their season was basically over. We weren't seeing him like placed in sort of a feature role. It was either him or Malcolm Brown or, you know, whatever that he wasn't able to really to take the role from anybody. Besides Todd Gurley. So I guess I'm a little bit higher on Akers, at least for 2020. Just looking at like where they drafted him and kind of where that team is headed. I think he's the better pass catcher. And from the way that things are looking with that offensive line, on the downslide, I'm looking at the guy that can kind of catch some of those dump offs out of the backfield. And I would take Akers over Henderson, at least me personally. But past that, I mean, I would think Akers would be one for me, probably Dobbins after that. I honestly would probably take DeAndre Swift ahead of Keyshawn Vaughn. For me, I think that Kerryon Johnson, he's had his chance. I think Swift is the better runner between the two and also the better pass catcher. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him walk into probably 70-30 split at worst between him and Kerryon Johnson at the onset of the 2020 season. And then it slowly shifting from there to Swift, like having more almost like a, Frank Gore, Devin Singletary role in Buffalo from this past season, where it's almost like a 40-60, 50-50 split somewhere in there. At least that's the way I'm seeing it.
Gotcha.
And then after that, Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yeah. So as far as from my standpoint, I go DeAndre Swift first. And I know I mentioned earlier like these veteran running backs, but Kerryon Johnson I have zero concern about. I do not care that he's there. I don't care how high everyone was on him at one point or another or up until this point. I do not care at all. I think DeAndre Swift is clearly the best running back of this group in general. And I think that he's in a situation where he's going to beat whoever is there before him and clearly take this job. That's my opinion. I think Cam Akers is second because my issue with Cam Akers, I love his ability. I love everything he does. My only issue is like Malcolm Brown. Like that guy just lasts and lasts in that offense. Mm-hmm. And so he's my biggest concern. I feel like they love him more than we think they love Malcolm Brown. So I think Malcolm Brown is as much of a reason why they let Gurley go than Cam Akers is, in my opinion. It's crazy, but that's how I feel. So DeAndre Swift, Akers, Dobbins, Vaughn for me. So I think every one of us listed these different, which is awesome. I love that because we did it for different reasons. And the people listening right now are on everyone's on a different page with all of us, just like we are. So this, again, kind of like the quarterbacks we just spoke about, this group is another fun group. Like you may get the guy you love earlier. You have to go from earlier. You may have to go from later. And that's the thing with like Scott Fishbowl, for instance, or your drafts. You never know who's with you on these guys. Like you never know if someone loves DeAndre Swift more than you or Cam Akers. These rookie running backs are just something else, man. It's just something else to deal with. So it's interesting that we all give totally different answers on this. Adam, did you say at the end of that argument there that you kind of side with him on J.K. Dobbins, or are you still looking at this differently if you're drafting today?
No, actually, I didn't even list these four in the order I would, but I kind of am in lockstep with you, honestly. Okay. Like, I think Kerryon Johnson isn't that big of a threat, if any. I think a lot of people thought Ameer Abdullah was a threat to Kerryon Johnson. Like, I think Detroit's kind of sifting through these running backs looking for something to hit. And DeAndre Swift coming into this draft, I mean, to me, he was top three in the class. So out of this group, he was the one I liked the best. So I feel like I'd still have to stick with that. But like I said, based on opportunity costs, the other three to me are really iffy. I'd probably put J.K. Dobbins at the top, similar to what Josh was thinking, just based upon the fact that if he gets opportunity, he's in the best offense for it. And Keyshawn Vaughn and Cam Akers, I mean, they're both in fantastic offenses as well. I think Cam Akers, honestly, I probably like his opportunity better, mostly just because I just don't know with where Keyshawn Vaughn was drafted. And honestly, just with what Tampa Bay looks to do in that Bruce Arians offense, how he's going to be utilized. So I think he's the one that I'm most unsure of.
Gotcha. Yeah, man, Swift, the best running back in Detroit since Jahvid Best, baby. I miss Jahvid Best, man. Wish he didn't get injured too much. All right. So rookie running backs are going to be fun. That's what we got out of that, and that we all feel a little bit differently about it. And, you know, we'll see as the season gets closer. This may change, of course. All right. I did ask our listeners for questions. Every time we have a guest on, I specifically ask for questions because I know a lot of, you know, the guests, the people who follow them, you know, want to participate. So I reach out to the audience for that more than ever. But our listeners came through, man. They came through. We asked for questions. They gave them very specific questions for Chris and then some general ones as well. I want to make sure we, you know, hit on the important ones here. We did have a tight end question when Justin was on, I believe, or was it last week? It may have been when Justin was on. But Brad Duff at Brad Duff 9, he welcome to Twitter too. I finally convinced him to get on Twitter. He's loving it. So he said there's a question at Brad Duff 9. He said, who will be this year's Darren the Baller Waller and Mark Andrews at any position? I guess take that how you want, as far as how you want to interpret that question, if he means a surprise or a duo at a position that maybe people didn't expect as much, or however you want to look at that question, feel free to take it however you want. But who will be this year's Darren the Baller Waller and Mark Andrews at any position? Josh, what do you got on this one, man?
You know, like, this guy is not a super deep name, but I feel like he is underappreciated, and it's Dallas Goedert. Okay, so Dallas Goedert right now is going behind guys like Jared Cook and TJ Hawkinson and Noah Fant. And none of those players got the volume that he got last year. I mean, I understand that Zach Ertz is there, but Dallas Goedert still gave fantasy owners 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 tight end 1 weeks. Yeah. Like, He's a legitimate starting tight end to have in some of these deeper leagues. And I feel like he just needs to be going a little bit higher.
Yeah. And if you're in Dynasty, I mean, at some point you'd assume Ertz is going to be gone. And, you know, Goddard would definitely be the one to, you know, to take his spot. So I think that's not a bad suggestion. Adam, do you have someone on your mind?
Yeah. So what I took this to mean is Darren Waller and Mark Andrews were guys last year that essentially could be drafted in some of the latest rounds of your draft. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are guys who are going in double digit rounds, probably in the teens of most drafts, but were able to finish at the top of their position. I don't know outside of the tight end position and maybe quarterback if you can have that level of upside, but it definitely happens. I mean, even a guy like DJ Chark, for instance, last year at the wide receiver position was being drafted in those teen rounds and ended up finishing as a top five receiver. So if there was somebody that has that potential this season, for me, I think it's Preston Williams. I think his splits when he was on the field last year were just fantastic. And I think that really Devonta Parker's breakout is kind of this facade that came from Preston Williams getting injured as a rookie. I mean, this guy was dominating the targets there before he got injured. Then he gets injured. Devonta Parker takes off. I think with him getting healthy again, especially if they have this, you know, gunslinger mentality with Ryan Fitzpatrick going into this season, there's the potential that he can have some really big weeks. And I think that he could overtake that wide receiver one position on that team.
For sure. Yeah, Preston Williams is a guy a lot of people are excited about. And that does fit into that role. And also, I will mention, if you listened to the podcast before you drafted last year, you would have gotten all the Darren Waller shares you needed. Right, Adam?
This is true
because you would have listened to me, and that's all that would have happened, man.
I think we talked Mark Andrews too. We had some deep holes. We had some nice deep holes.
Chris, how do you feel about this one, man? Do you got any player that comes to mind? It can be a tight end or it could be another position, he said. And any players that I guess we can kind of look at them as sleepers or guys you can get late that you think could have a real chance of, you know, just exploding in fantasy?
Yeah, I like looking at the tight end. To be quite honest, like, nobody likes looking at like late round tight ends because like that position turns into a wasteland after about week four. But in general, though, if you're looking for a late round tight end, I mean, a lot of the quote unquote late round tight ends have already been popularized. Like, people are already on the Hayden Hurst train. Blake Jarwin is already on the map. But one guy that I've been focusing on, I think, since midway through last season is Jonnu Smith from the Titans. Mm-hmm. Second in red zone targets, right behind AJ Brown over the 2019 season. Corey Davis, I don't know if anybody is still on that train and waiting for him to break out, but as of right now, it is AJ Brown firmly in the wide receiver one spot. And then in terms of pass catchers after that, I mean, who else is supposed to take some of these passes from Ryan Tannehill? Derrick Henry is not involved in the passing game, or at least not enough to make a significant dent. They bring on Darrington Evans as a Deion Lewis replacement, but again, he's just a rookie. So in terms of pass catchers, who else is supposed to help? I mean, who else is supposed to suck up some of those targets? I think a lot of it could be Jonnu Smith, especially now with the departure of Delanie Walker. He's a guy, I mean, Smith is one of those guys you can pick up in as the, tight end 14? Tight end 15 in some cases. I mean, he's going fairly late in drafts. And I think from a target standpoint perspective, he's a guy that you should be targeting because he can rack up a lot of those weekly targets and provide you a floor with a chance at getting that ceiling. Because again, who else is supposed to be catching some of those red zone targets as the Titans matriculate the ball down the field?
Right. Yeah. He's a name we spoke about the last couple of weeks and people are excited about him. So it definitely is a legitimate case. Even if we go even deeper, a guy I like is Ian Thomas. Like, Greg Olsen left that spot wide open. The offense, you know, the new head coach favors that position. He uses it. And he's like the next guy up. So, like, why not? You know, I just feel like, you know, he could be Teddy Bridgewater's new favorite, you know, target at this point. So he's another guy. Like, for some reason, like you said, everyone hates late tight ends, but I actually like him. Like, I'm not mad at them. Like, I like picking them and I like getting them, and they act, when they actually, you know, play out and have some success, you know, like a Darren Waller, like a Mark Andrews, and especially, you know, with us going into the Scott Fishbowl, it's a super important question, right? Because, you know, in your basic leagues, your redraft leagues, your not so deep leagues, like maybe these guys aren't relevant, but in a league like Scott Fishbowl, and Ian Thomas is possibly going to be super relevant. A Smith, you know, Chris Herndon, like these guys, like, may be really important to some teams. So it's a really important question right now. Obviously people will do more and more research on it as, you know, they get closer to the Scott Fishbowl draft in here. But yeah, I think they're super relevant and important. They probably get ignored too much in leagues like this, but I know it's not the, you know, most popular thing because not everybody's in the league, so it tends to get ignored. But anyone who's in tight end, you know, bonus leagues and stuff know that these guys are, you know, important in that facet. All right, cool. So that was a good question from Brad. The next one from Dookie. Hey, Dookie sent in the question when we had Justin on too. And I got on about the name. I was like, I don't know what this name means, but it must mean something to him. And he actually gave me a description, explanation on Twitter after that. So it's a good inside joke. And Dookie shared it with me. So I appreciate him for doing that. At Dookie Hogue, H-O-G-U-E, if you're looking for him. He's asking, how is your NEIPA going, Chris?
Oh, yeah. So we were talking about homebrewing earlier, and New England IPAs, so the hazy IPAs that I guess has been fairly popular for the past like couple summers and whatnot, that's what I prefer to make. I know a lot of folks, especially those people that are into craft brew, I mean, I think IPAs are just like the traditional IPAs, like folks are, I guess most people are tired of them, too bitter. I mean, just not what they're looking for in terms of a summer beer, and I totally understand. New England IPAs, way different. Fruity aroma, fruity flavor. I mean, that's what I prefer to make, and that's actually what I've won a couple of awards for just coming up with recipes on my own that go off of that style. So I started brewing one last Saturday. I actually have the fermenter sitting in my fridge right now, cold crashing, because I want to try and clear out some of the like the chunks of yeast and like the yeast sediment and some hops, but I should have it kegged up by this weekend. So I'll have some picks out and I'll put them on my TL and let y'all see. Hopefully this batch comes out a little bit better. It's a similar recipe that I sent over to Gabe Gearing, Mr. FF Man Bun himself. I wasn't too happy with the aesthetic, so I tweaked the recipe a little bit and hopefully I fixed it, but we'll see. I'll have something up for y'all to see here in a few days though.
Nice. Now, Chris, I don't fancy myself a drinker, so that might be disappointing to you, but my guys, Adam and Josh, you're known to dibble and dabble in it, you know? What would you recommend to them, man, if they never had a New England IPA? Like, is there a recommendation?
Let's see. Where are y'all from?
I'm based out of Chicago and he's in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Chicago, I've been out that way. And let's see, I think, was it Lagunitas? I think they're, at least they have a brewery like in the Chicago area. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, they have a hazy that's there. I forget the name of it, but check theirs out. Okay. That one's good. Oklahoma, I don't know anything out that way.
That's all right.
But,
perfect.
But I,
tumbleweed.
We get Lagunitas here.
Okay. But I've got another one that you might be, let's see, I'm holding a can here from Topps Brewery. Now this is in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if they have anything they distribute out your way. That might be fairly close, but this is a Topps IPA that's actually brewed with Citra Galaxy and Mosaic. It will get you about to where what I'm talking about in terms of, like, the fruity aroma and flavor. Highly recommend that. So if you find anything from Topps, try and pick them up, pick one of theirs up. I thought it was pretty good.
Nice. All right. Thanks, man.
Nice. Not much happens in Oklahoma, Chris. So I don't blame you for not knowing much about what's out there. It's about just Josh and that's it. So, yeah. The next one we have here is from at Big Willie 13. He's asking about team regression. He said, how does he spot it and which teams might be due for it this year? Chris, you want to start for this? I know you've seen it on Twitter earlier, so you might have some already.
Yeah. So this actually goes into the article that I was working on earlier today. And part of the thing that one of the things that I've been looking at, and again, you probably hear and see all the great analysts talk about it like each year. So like JJ Zacharys and so on and so forth, about just like trends across the league that are stable or that correlate year over year. And so one of the things that we can at least look at that correlates year over year would be passing attempts. That's fairly stable, at least from a league-wide standpoint. Efficiency, so adjusted yards per attempt, that's fairly stable year over year. But things that aren't that stable that year over year are touchdowns and touchdowns touchdown rate. I mean, that's fairly fluky year over year. So if you see quarterbacks, the typical, I would say the average passing rate, let's say, is probably around like 4.5%. So the number of touchdowns divided by total number of passing attempts, that passing rate, somewhere around 4.5%, like on average. So if you see guys that are, you know, at 8%, 9%, I like talking to you, Lamar Jackson, I mean, that might be cause for concern for the year afterwards. Now, in Lamar Jackson's case, he obviously has the rushing to supplement like what he does through the air. So that's a whole different discussion. But for guys that wind up hitting that high rate, so like Ryan Tannehill, I think he had a fairly high rate this past season. Mm-hmm. You might look for them to start regressing like in the next year. So so that's part of it. The other thing that you have to take into context is also the surrounding talent. I mean, that either changes, stays the same, coaching changes, I mean, whatever, that will help you figure out, well, how is this team going to operate in the upcoming season? So in a lot of the cases that I just mentioned, like with Lamar Jackson, really the only thing that we can expect is that, all right, so he's going to regress in the touchdown rate department. Okay. We can also assume that, all right, he might fall back in terms of the amount of rushing that he's going to do as well. But does he still have a QB1 rank in his range of outcomes? I still think that answer is yes. I mean, he can still outpace the rest of the league in what he can do on the field.
Right.
So it's just looking at some of those metrics and finding out like what's stable year over year can at least help you from a league-wide sense pick out the players that kind of are like they did more than what was expected. They did less than what was expected. And then you can kind of go from there.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a super good answer. I don't want to really mess with that answer because it seemed pretty well thought out already. And you said you're writing on it right now. That's the article that's going on 4 for 4 soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, cool. That's what I've been looking at.
Okay, Josh, I mean, any take on this? Yeah. I know you harassed the guy for asking the question, which.
Well, I knew I was going to have to do some research. So I pulled up like a lot of what Chris was talking about, a lot of like red zone conversion rate and also expected fantasy points, and just tried to get a feel for who was really outplaying their volume. And then also I looked at like teams that played with a very favorable game script, and just from looking at all those things, I got a feeling that the 49ers and the Bills are two teams that are not as often talked about, but I think that they will regress some next year. I think they were over efficient, played a little over their head. Like with the 49ers also, we know that a lot of their favorable game script and other just good circumstances that they had were due to the defense, and defenses aren't that stable year to year,
right,
compared to a passing game. So those two teams, I think, are on the way down.
Those two stand out to you. Makes sense. It makes sense. Adam, do you have anything for this, or you think these guys covered it pretty well?
No, I mean, they hit on a lot of the main things that I look at, but like Chris was saying, kind of to echo that, the main things that I pay attention to for fantasy from a regression standpoint have to do with touchdown rate, specifically passing touchdown rate and rushing touchdown rate. I think that touchdowns are probably the thing that are oddly both most impactful for fantasy and most difficult to predict because they tend to be the flukiest. That being stated, touchdown rate can kind of give you a little bit of an indication. I mean, there are some guys who just have a fantastic historical passing touchdown rate, like a Drew Brees, for instance. Then you have someone who really exceeded their touchdown rate expectation last year in Ryan Tannehill, who was already mentioned. Now, Lamar Jackson's a super interesting one because he had a touchdown rate well above anyone else in the league last year. But because of his, you know, he's obviously going to regress. But then because of his rushing, you don't know how much to take that regression into effect from a fantasy perspective. So for me, it's one of those things where like it's a piece of the puzzle, but it definitely isn't something that I try and focus on too much as far as predicting someone's regression.
Right.
But then there's obviously like glaring examples like Aaron Jones, that's already been mentioned, who was able to score 16 touchdowns on 230 rushing attempts. And like, that's likely not sustainable. So there's certain, you know, situations that are glaringly obvious, but outside of those, I try not to become overly predictive in regards to regression. I think one factor that no one has talked about that I think plays a lot into regression actually comes just from basic schedule strength. But I think strength of schedule is such a difficult thing to predict that it's not something that's going to be super intuitive to try and base your, you know, thoughts around or your own predictions around. But I think it plays a huge factor.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into this, and I'm sure Chris's article is going to cover a lot, and everyone here has kind of already covered a lot. But I hope we answered this question. I think we did pretty. I think we did pretty well covering it there.
Can I just say like one little note on the end of this?
Yeah.
When we talk about like regression and efficiency and all this stuff, we shouldn't overthink it. Like when you find out that a player like Lamar Jackson on their dice, on their range of outcomes, when you find out that they have a six. Like that's a good dice to be rolling.
Right.
Even if he's not going to be a six, maybe next year, you at least know it's a possibility.
Right.
A lot of players don't have a six. So like, don't be too shy to take a player that was super hot efficiency wise last year.
It's you can't be afraid, right? You can't play afraid at the same time.
Yeah. Like draft all the Tyler Lockett, all of it,
all of it. All right. The next one we have here is the last question that I wanted to get on the show for sure. It's from Justin. Justin, man, he sent us a question at @Justin_Redwords. How long does a typical brew take for you, and will you name an Irish Red after him, Chris?
Of course. I love that, man. So a typical brew, at least for me, takes, I would say, on average about 5 hours. So if you're doing it the all grain style, let's say about an hour to get your 45 minutes or so to get your water up to temp, maybe another 45 minutes for your mash, maybe then another 45 minutes or so to get to transfer or to pull like your wort from that, then get your water up to boiling another hour after that. I mean, so you're already at about the four and a half hours cleanup and all that. So yeah, about somewhere between 5 and 6 hours for a brew. So I'll probably start in the morning around 10, 11, and then I'm done around like 5-ish. But I know there are some guys that can go, that can, when they start brewing, they are moving, man. And they can get things done in about 4 hours. I haven't been able to master that yet because I'm always tinkering with stuff, measuring things, making sure everything's the way that it should be or the way that I'm expecting it to be. But yeah, about five, 6 hours.
Yeah. Now, like I said, I don't drink, but like, I respect that field. Like you said, the way you're talking about it, I see that everyone that's in it is like super in it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a super passionate group. I've seen people who rate, you know, beers, people who make beers, mm-hmm. people who do both. Like, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of passionate people about it. So it's, you know, I love seeing that kind of stuff.
It's a very process oriented hobby.
Yeah.
Very much like what we do for fantasy football.
Right. And shout out to Justin too, for kind of making this episode happen too. He connected us. So, shout out to Justin for all of that.
May I just say, I hope that, brewing isn't process over results.
Oh no, I drink all the results. So, I mean, I'm all about the results.
But it is another thing where like you get results and people say, oh, you're bad at this. You know, just like fantasy football, right? Exactly. Like you have to face the truth every damn week.
Exactly. And I mean, a single batch of brew is typically 5 gallons. So if you're bad at this, you've got 5 gallons of bad beer that you're stuck with.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody will take it, right? Somebody don't care what it tastes like.
Like I said, I'll drink all of it. I mean, I'll have all of that.
All right, awesome. Well, we appreciate everyone for sending in the questions, as always. We seriously are really humble about it. I want to jump over to Foul or No Foul before we close out the show. Foul or No Foul, for anyone new who's listening, this is, you know, one of my favorite parts of the show. It's that part where I think most of the listeners probably scream at the phone in agreement or disagreement with us, but screaming their answers. But I'm going to give you statements, everybody. If you agree with the statement, it's no foul. If you think there's something wrong with what I'm saying, you don't agree with it, then it's foul. All right. We'll let you go first, Chris. All right. As the guest, you know, of honor here. The first one here is a healthy Odell Beckham Jr. will be a top 15 wide receiver once again. Foul or no foul?
No foul.
No foul. Landry was number 12 last year in PPR, I believe. So
I think he can do better than that. Okay. Yeah.
All right. No foul. So that knocks Landry down a bunch, you think, or you think they're both up there in that top 20 range?
I mean, I think they both had what, 26-24% target share in the mm-hmm. Cleveland Browns offense. I mean, that was under Freddie Kitchens. I mean, if we think it to be a little bit more efficient with Kevin Stefanski, I mean, why not?
All right. I like it. Anyone, Josh, Adam, disagree with that? Not seeing a revival here of Beckham?
Yeah, I don't think that offense supports two top 24 wide receivers. And I think that Jarvis Landry has just shown year after year after year that he's a guy that, for whatever reason, NFL offenses love to target. He's probably going to out-target Odell. So for me, just based upon volume alone, I think he has the greater chance to be the best wide receiver in that offense.
Interesting. Josh, do you agree with that? Which side do you agree with? You have to pick a side, Chris or Adam.
I think that if Baker really gets off the ground, then it could happen. But so that exists. But I'm more tending to believe like Odell around wide receiver 20.
Okay. But do you see Beckham top 15 then? You said, what did you say?
I said, I've got him at wide receiver 20. He can get 15. That's, you know, he has that amount of ceiling. I just don't know that I have that much faith in the Browns really getting it going.
All right. So you're a foul then. You and Adam are foul. Right? That's what I'm thinking from this. You guys aren't too confident about it. My boy Chris stepped in the line there. He said, "Nah, I'm going with this one." And I'm with him.
I'm going to run it. I'm going to be the dissenter.
Let's leave these guys behind, man. All right, the next one, another wide receiver. Henry Ruggs will be the Raiders' number one wide receiver in fantasy football this season. Foul or no foul, Adam?
I don't know. No foul? Sure, but you got your Raider question. Come on. I don't know. They'll probably end up being like, what was that, Seattle last year that had no one go over 500 receiving yards? Was that offense? I can't recall. One of them had like six players that all – had under 500 receiving yards, but yeah, sure, Ruggs. Yeah, all right. Oh man, who's next?
This disrespect is disgusting. First of all, do you hear this guy?
Actually, I take it back. It's gonna be Hunter Renfro. It's gonna be Hunter Renfro with a solid like 720 yards.
I think DK had like 900 yards last year, so I don't know what you're talking about with
500. He had 100 yards. Targets.
So yeah, this guy's crazy. This guy was Jarvis Landry. He's so delirious. Did
not get 500 yards.
This guy's nuts. He just wanted to hate on Ruggs so bad he couldn't even think straight.
It's true.
This guy's over here saying nuts stuff, man. Josh, you with Renfro here or Ruggs or someone else?
It's going to be Darren Waller. Like, can we just please stop pretending that Darren Waller did not happen? It was not a circumstance. I thought we were
talking wide receivers.
This is wide receivers.
It's Darren Waller. He's a wide receiver now.
So listen, that's two fouls. Chris?
Disrespect to Foster Moreau is just so wild right now. Like, I can't with either of you, to be quite honest. No, I'm playing. I can't see it. I mean, if you are saying the wide receiver one on the team,
right?
Sure.
Okay.
But pass catcher, I can't see it. Gotcha. I call foul.
Gotcha. You guys are all disrespecting Jason Witten, if we're being honest. And just not gonna let that fly. So Jason, I'm here for you, man. These guys didn't even acknowledge you, and you're the GOAT. They didn't even acknowledge you over here. All right. Next one. Antonio Brown will sign with an NFL team before the season starts. Foul or no foul? Chris.
Foul. I think Josh, he's done. Sorry.
That's cool. Step out of line. It's cool, man. Oklahoma stuff. Go ahead.
What?
Go ahead. You said foul?
No, that's all I had, man.
That's it?
Like foul.
All these rumors floating around, you got nothing, man?
Rumors?
Yeah. You guys are going to address rumors. The Bucks might sign them, this, that. Brady might be, you know, banging the table for him. Anyone confident that Antonio Brown plays this season? Anybody?
I'm confident he plays. I don't think it's going to be with the Bucks.
Yeah, I don't think so either. If he plays with the Bucks, that means Tom Brady won. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, neither do I. But I think he plays. I have no issue with it. I don't think it's with Tampa Bay.
I feel like in the NFL anymore, unless it's 100% forbidden that a player plays, they're going to play. I mean, he's going to end up somewhere. Someone is going to sign him. So it's just a matter of who and when. And I think the when is going to be the biggest question as far as if he has any fantasy relevance, because with this weird off season, I don't know how much preparation anyone's going to get. And I'm wary of anyone going to a new team, let alone someone who didn't play last year, basically. So, yeah, I mean, if he ends up anywhere, it's going to be really iffy to judge if he has any value.
I think it's kind of interesting that, like, Antonio Brown was going crazy for a while. And maybe I'm not following him or something, but I haven't seen anything about Antonio Brown in a while. Like, he's now pretty quiet.
He's wisely shut up.
Yeah.
And just kept to himself.
Yeah. Whenever it comes to players like this, I always think of the Seahawks. So if I had to guess, that's where my money would be. But he did get...
No, Josh Gordon is going back to the Seahawks. All right. That's possible. I mean, weed is already legal out there. So just let him go be out in Seattle. And, you know, let Flash be Flash. Antonio Brown could be anywhere else.
Hey, give me Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon. I like both guys. So.
Oh, hey, now we're talking.
Bring them back. Bring them both back. Okay. Let's go.
And then let Russ hand the ball off to Chris Carson 30 times a game.
Exactly.
Hey, I heard Cam Newton just went to a team that needs some wide receivers. So.
Well.
And they both, Newton with Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, and Julian Edelman. Let's go.
And they've both been a Patriots before, too.
I know.
That's funny. I'm just disappointed that you didn't say N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
I know. Rude. N'Keal Harry.
Disrespectful.
I was leaving it for Josh. I was already defending Jason Witten.
The best receiver on that team.
Yeah. I was already defending Jason Witten. I knew Josh would defend N'Keal Harry. So, the last one I have here, we've seen it in Major League Baseball and in the NBA. Next, an NFL player will opt out of the 2020 season due to all the issues we're currently facing, including, of course, Corona. Foul or no foul, Chris?
I say foul. I can't see that happening.
NFL players are dogs. You don't see it.
I can't see it. I mean, the NFLPA, I think they're too tight-knit for one of them to just go off and just be like, nah, I'm out.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if it's anybody, you'll be like, I don't know, backup kicker somewhere that'll try and make a statement. But I can't see any player of note just saying that they're not going to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've seen it happen in a lot of the major league sports. Josh or Adam, either one of you think any player is going to pull that? Like, opt out of the year, too much, you know, bigger things going on, or I'm worried about their health and my family, that kind of stuff?
I mean, it's a big league. I think I'd kind of be shocked if there wasn't a single player.
Right.
I mean, these are insane circumstances. So, I think there's definitely going to be at least someone, but I think it's interesting to think that the NFL just kind of has a clamp on players so much more than any other league, because they do, man. It's so evident just with how little the players in the NFL speak up or are allowed to really show their personality. I mean, the whole Cam Newton fiasco really seems like a great example of that in a lot of ways. I think that it's probably going to happen, but I'd be very surprised if it's like some big name player,
right,
or something that causes a large amount of media attention.
So not a player of note, but definitely possible.
Yeah.
Josh, exactly. You same way, man?
Man, if a player does that, like, I feel like you got to support him.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I almost feel like I would feel bad about a season.
Mm-hmm.
If there are players doing that,
yeah,
it would be hard for me to support a season.
For sure. Yeah, it's weird right now, man. You keep hearing about sports, like basketball is going to come back in Orlando, Major League Baseball. Like, man, I don't see it. Like, I just don't see it right now, man. Like, it just seems so shaky. It seems so shaky at best.
Yeah, the basketball one's especially weird because they're essentially having everyone go to Orlando and quarantine a certain area specifically for the NBA.
Yeah.
Which, to me, just sounds like an insane obstacle. I mean, I think that other leagues and organizations need to take cues from the UFC. It's hard, obviously, because the UFC probably has far fewer people that they need to run a production. That being said, I mean, you got to take notes from the only people who've been able to do it successfully throughout this whole thing. And honestly, I think that what the NBA is proposing right now just sounds like a crazy mess.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the NFL is even proposing. I mean, I think that, at this point, it's really, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah. The funny thing with the UFC is they keep using these big arenas, and it's like, for what? Like, why are you guys keep doing this? Like,
right.
It's so ridiculous. Like, use a room. Like, what are we doing?
They signed a lease, man.
Whatever. Whatever. All right. That's it for Foul or No Foul. It was a good one. I hope you guys have fun playing along, listening. The last thing we do here before we close out the show is our show and tell. Chris, you have not been prepared for this. I will allow you to go last so you have time to think. In show and tell, we choose any product, podcast, music, book, philosophy, advice, whatever you feel like sharing with the listeners. You will get a chance to, of course, share your Twitter and all that stuff, so you can wait for that. But as far as like anything that you feel, you know, is prominent right now that you feel like you want to share with people to get them into that, I'll start with Filthy Rich on Netflix, Jeffrey Epstein documentary. I may be late to this, I don't know, but I'm only like two episodes in. It's, you know, a ton of it is based to where I live in Palm Beach County, so it was kind of like, I don't want to say interesting, that's not the word, but, you know, sad, crazy story. Obviously, we know everything about Jeffrey Epstein, but it's just, you know, this really in-depth look from people who have been affected by it and everything. And I didn't know it ran that deep here locally. So definitely worth a watch if you're looking for something to binge on during your downtime. They did a really good job producing this. Adam, do you have anything today, man?
You know, there was one thing that was floating around the internet that I've always been a big fan of, Sacha Baron Cohen and things that he has done. And he got a little bit of publicity, I think, unintentionally this past weekend for something that I think he was filming for his HBO series, This Is America. But there's a little clip floating around the internet that I highly recommend finding. It's very silly, but it's Sacha Baron Cohen essentially singing to, I guess you would say, like a right-wing rally. I think that's extremely unfair. I think it was supposed to be like a militia rally, actually.
Okay.
But nonetheless, the Sacha Baron Cohen character gets on stage, and he's like this big country singer guy, and he basically just tries to create a sing-along of some of the most offensive terminology currently going around this particular political climate. So it's very hilarious and entertaining and over the top, and I don't know. It was one of those things that I saw and I was just like, hey, great, this is what the world needs right now. Just something to mock everything, because it all seems so polarized.
Yeah, I haven't seen that clip yet. I did see his name or something go across my screen on Twitter, but I just didn't click on it yet. But
it's way too catchy.
Yeah. I'll check it out.
The songs are way too catchy.
I'll check it out for sure. Josh, what have you brought to the show and tell today, man?
So I gotta tell you guys something that happened to me the other night. Okay, I'm sitting in the front of my house and I hear, just like clear as day, 6 real loud pops. And it sounded just exactly like a gun to me. So I run to the back of the house. I am calling 911. I'm like hyperventilating. The guy answers the phone. I give him my address. I tell him what happened. There's been a shooting. I am like 100% convinced that someone was just murdered. And through the course of this call, both of us figure out that it was more than likely firecrackers. And by the end of the call, I was just glad that the guy was not mad at me for calling 911.
This guy here.
I wonder, like, how many times they have to talk people down and be like, sir, I believe you just haven't heard fireworks in a while.
Like, they had to be like right by my house, but I was 100% convinced it was a gun when I called.
Edibles will do that to you, man.
Right.
Those will definitely do that to you. Some of Chris's beer might do that to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of it might.
The guy on the phone was super nice. Like, he was not upset at all.
Yeah. It might have been fireworks from June, firecrackers from fireworks or whatever from Juneteenth. I've been hearing them a lot that day, obviously, you know, for good reason. But since then, they've still been going off a lot. So I think people have some left over or something. So it might have been that. Chris, you see what we've been doing here, man. You see what we've been sharing. What do you have for us, man? You have something in that brief period of time we gave you to prepare?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll shout out a podcast that I was a part of, but I think it's poignant given our current climate. It's a podcast that's hosted by Sam Lane, Stompy. Let's say Ant Stompy the Bear, I think, is his new Twitter handle, something like that. Mm-hmm. He's the SFBA champion. Also a good buddy of mine. We actually met at the Midwest Fantasy Football Expo last year. But it's the podcast itself is called Listen, a Podcast. And what it is he's bringing on a number of African-American fantasy analysts or journalists or just like people within the industry, not to talk fantasy football, but just to talk about their perspectives of being an African-American and like their life growing up in America. I was the I'll say I was the guinea pig. I was a part of the very first episode. And since then, he's had a chance to sit down with some of the other good folks in the industry, like Ray Garvin. He's also got a chance to sit down with Marcus Grant from the NFL Network. So just good conversations to have just to get different perspectives about living in America as an African-American. So I would encourage folks that if you're even remotely, if you're conflicted about the things that are going on right now, just listen. I mean, really, that's the only thing before, and this thing that I said on the podcast, the thing I've been saying for a while, before you want to go out and start tweeting or retweeting or arguing with folks or like starting a debate, just take that same energy and try and listen to a different perspective. And I think this podcast is a part of that. So if you get a chance, look it up. Again, it's called Listen, colon a Podcast by Sam Lane. So give it a listen and let us know what you think.
Yeah, big ups to Sam for that, Stompy. I did catch some of the Ray episode, I believe, when he retweeted it. The one thing I will say too, I mean, obviously the whole situation sucks that we're at this point, but it is beautiful all the good stuff that has come from it. And shout out to him for picking three awesome people too, because you know, obviously we're really cool with Ray, cool with Marcus. You're obviously here on the podcast. So really good people to start with too, because you guys are great representatives of everything that you guys are doing and just, you know, all out good people. So really good choices to kind of get that off the ground and make a lot of noise with it, because it's important. So we definitely shout that out. That's it, man. That's all we got. I do want to say, Chris, let the listeners know where they can find you on social media. Of course, we kind of mentioned all the places to consume your content, but throw that at them again just so they know in case they didn't write it down in the beginning. I'm sure Adam's already wrote all your stuff down, but
Let
the listeners get it.
But first and foremost, I mean, to three of y'all, I mean, thank you so much, I mean, for having me on tonight. I mean, I love kicking back and talking about fantasy football with the best of them, and I think y'all are definitely it. I mean, I've had a blast, like, coming in and sitting down, and I hope I didn't cause too much of a ruckus, you know, with my takes on Mark Ingram earlier. But no, I appreciate y'all for having me on. But for anybody that does want to come, you know, yell at me about Mark Ingram or whatever, you can find me on Twitter, at Chris Allen, FFWX. Like I mentioned beforehand, most of my work is over at 444, but I do contribute to a number of other sites because there's just so many good analysts out there that are contributing, not just good analysts, but good people. And that's what I like to do. I like to branch out and work with as many great minds in the fantasy industry as possible. So you'll see me working with Sig. I'll actually be on the couch tomorrow with Sigmund nice. Bloom. I'm recording with him tomorrow morning. And I'm working with John Paulson over at 444, Ken Moody, Ryan McDowell, those fellows over at Dynasty League Football, just good people to work with. And I think that's what makes this industry great. It's being a part of the community, listening and learning with them. So, I mean, you can find me on Twitter. You can find me almost anywhere. I mean, at some point I'll probably I'm collecting content sites like Thanos picking up Infinity Gems. I mean, it's just what I do.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming on for sure. We appreciate the kind words and definitely echo your sentiments on all that stuff. Definitely go follow Chris. Check him out. If you want to follow Josh for some weird reason, I'm just kidding. You can find Josh at, where is it at, Josh?
JC Crocker.
Okay. JC Crocker on Twitter. And do you have any new content recently?
Not really.
Not really. Slacking. This guy's slacking, man. Now, Adam, you know, this guy's slacking. He doesn't have any new player profile articles, nothing. Adam, I let Josh say his Twitter, so I'm going to ask you to say your Twitter, and I'm not going to say it for you. Adam can be found at?
I'm glad you queued it up just, like, so nice for me this time.
I try.
It's at the other FF guy.
Perfect. Perfect. You can find him at The Other FF Guy, at JC Crocker. You can find me at Clock Dodgers on Twitter, Instagram, all those good things. I do, again, I just want to make sure we shout out everyone who's been sending us in questions. We've been getting a lot of people shouting us out on Twitter too. I just want to really quick acknowledge some of those people. RPaul47 today, I believe, mentioned that he subscribed to the show. He really liked it. At Fantasy Champ, FFB underscore Casey gave us a lot of love on Twitter. Kev says 68 on Twitter says, he's been showing us a lot of love. And then I believe it was Corey Jeffries, Pyro Corey, recently said something too. I just want to kind of acknowledge some people because I feel like I acknowledge you guys on Twitter, but I feel like it's not enough. So anytime someone tweets at me, I try my best to acknowledge you there, of course, but I want to, you know, give you guys as much love as possible. And your support, your retweet, you just tweeting out saying that you subscribed to the show and it was good, or you mentioned, you know, us to other people, or leaving reviews, all those things, like, I can't thank you enough. It's one of those things where, like, people are so quick to leave negative energy or comments or remarks, but it's not so easy on positive stuff. So when you guys do that, it means literally the world to us. If you haven't already, please slap the subscribe button, drop a 5-star review, go follow Chris, go consume his content. He's a really good dude with amazing stuff. So go check him out. Thank you, everybody, for your unwavering support. We appreciate you. As always, be kind, be great, keep dodging.